We're recording today on the lands of the Yagara people, and we acknowledge the traditional elders here, past and present. Hello everyone, I'm Andrea. I'm a former registered nurse and midwife and a community advocate. Welcome to Beyond the Rona.
Hi, and I'm Tim. I'm a digital marketer and small business owner. And we're on a journey here with Beyond the Rona to find out what our community members think, the big problems and the big solutions as we emerge from the pandemic.
Today, we're talking to Jordan Hall, who's actually the candidate for Ford for this upcoming federal election.
For the Greens.
For the Greens.
I feel like that's important to mention.
It is important to mention, yes. Welcome, Jordan. It's really good to have you here. Jordan is one of our youngest candidates, and I'm very, very proud to have him on the show today. He's a Western Waka Waka man, and again, very proud to have a First Nations person represent the community. We actually wanted to talk about education and young people. Tim and I have done a couple of shows now talking to young people, talking to people about education, and I guess coming through the pandemic and looking at what this means, what the cost of living means for young people. But I guess in terms of, you know, the fact that they've got to shoulder this, I suppose the burden of what's happened from the previous generations. With climate change and with the cost of living now, and with, you know, with the fact that they're kind of saddled with having to have university or some sort of training in order to get jobs. But then they're saddled with this huge debt, not only leaving school, but then they've got to have some sort of training to be competitive in this world to get a job. Jordan, can you tell us a little bit about what it's like being a young person and having that pressure on you from all different directions we're hearing?
So I think a key shift that's happened for university and TAFE and how this puts pressure on people trying to enter the workforce is university and TAFE have become essentially job training programs. So where a person used to do an apprenticeship with an established plumber, say, it's now a TAFE course. And where people used to be trained by, you know, the pharmacist, the doctor, whatever, by doing some sort of on-the-job training, that has now been outsourced to a job training program, effectively called a bachelor's degree at a university. So where education was previously, it was used to be mostly about, you know, learning new information and skills. And, you know, you mostly had a Bachelor of Arts or a Bachelor of Science, broadly speaking. Right? It's now become a necessary requirement in order to do a job, because job training has been outsourced to universities. And so it's not just an expectation, it's a requirement to get, you know, most jobs that previously you would have been employed as a junior and as an assistant or whatever, an apprentice in that job. And the fact that that is now run as a for-profit business, and you are the person who is required to get that, is left with upwards of 20, just keep going basically, but start at 20 some thousand roughly, we'll say, dollars in debt, is it's, you know, if life is a race, I guess it certainly gives you a, you know, a handicap before you can get started.
That's
sort of how I would see it. It's become essential to go to university or TAFE in order to complete what is effectively now an outsourced jobs training program.
Yeah, yeah. I remember when I would be, because I was, you know, registered nurse and midwife, and now, you know, they used to do all of the training in the hospitals, But then they started, they moved it all into the university with prac. You know, you've got to do practical work the hospital as well. But the comments that you used to get from older people who did their university, their hospital training, was that they wanted a lot more practical training and a lot less university training. And they used to, they hated the fact that, you know, people were coming out to these practical jobs with more sort of more academic skills rather than hands-on skills, you know. And it seems to be that there's this two groups. There's like the academic groups, and then there's the practical hands-on skills groups. They seem to be kind of at odds with each other. I don't know. What do you think about that?
I'm not sure that I can comment on how effective it is to change the model of jobs training. I don't really know if it produces better or worse outcomes. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I can see how for certain jobs where practical training is what you really need, and academic training is less required. I don't know. I think at the core, if you give this to a university to do, right, the model of a university is research classes, that sort of thing, right? It is very academic. It is about, you know, it's a research institution primarily, they used to be, right? So the model of education that universities are, like the paradigm, we'll even say, of education that they understand and are able to deliver is this historic sort of education based on research and learning about, you know what I mean? Like higher learning, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
Theory, academic stuff.
Yeah.
So I think it's reasonable to believe that they would be ill-suited for preparing people for very hands-on tasks.
Yeah.
But like, does that necessarily mean that modern teachers, nurses, pharmacists, you know, whatever now requires a uni degree versus an apprentice, you know, a jobs training program in the company or in the hospital or whatever? Are they worse today? I don't know. I don't know if I can actually say that. Probably not. I'm not sure. But
then the hard part is that you leave university with, you know, I don't know, $50,000 debt on top of that, rather than getting paid for your practical work. For your...
It creates a market. Basically, it is fueling, it is pumping up a market, right? So the company doesn't have to pay somebody who doesn't know everything, right?
Mm.
They don't have to pay to train someone, right? The person has to pay to be trained by another company. So it's maximizing the profit that you can squeeze out of a person.
Yeah.
So rather than saying you're investing in a person so that they will develop the skills to work in your company or, you know, be a nurse or whatever, right? You are saying, well, that person has to invest in their education and give money to a for-profit uni, and then they will take that and go to work at a job. And so they've managed to dodge paying to train someone, and this whole additional sector of work, of industry, I guess, and squeezing profit out of people has been opened up for the universities.
Yeah.
Have we just found another problem with money in... It's just like add that to all the lists of things, right? Like money just... that for-profit motive.
Sure. Yeah. So, you know, I certainly believe that we need to be putting people ahead of profit.
Absolutely.
Think that there are things in the world, actually, that are more important than making more money.
Yeah.
More and more and more money. And that, you know, I think... what we have now is an obvious extension of what we had 50 years ago, right? If you're like, well, it's a free market, and so if you open up this opportunity and there's a demand and you can supply something, it's like, well, yeah, obviously this is going to happen. And maybe that's not good, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's the level of responsibility too. I mean, we're talking about young people who, I mean, they're very, very intelligent. I mean, my kids are, you know, very smart when they've just left school. You know, I can't help them with their homework because it's way above my head. They learn a lot more when they are in high school now than what we had to learn. Then when they are on prac, they give them responsibility for, you know, because they're kind of free labor, you know, so they, I know in the nursing department, they get given, you know, a full patient load, even as a student. So they're kind of seen as, you know, free labor instead of, seeing them as a student who should be given, you know, who should be shadowed with somebody. Do you know what I'm trying to say? Like it's yes. taking advantage of the, mm-hmm. of the situation.
Yeah.
Which is not good for their mental health either, because they're supposed to be students. They're supposed to be learning, and they're supposed to be learning from somebody else.
Yeah. I don't think the system's broken. I think it's designed to be harmful.
Yeah.
Designed to be exploited.
Yeah. It's by design, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Exploiting them. Yeah.
Like that's the whole thing. If you have a profit motive, right,
yes.
you can see a person as a unit of labor, basically.
Yeah.
And they are there to, you input them, right? And you get money as an output. So they exist to be basically an exploited resource. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it seems to be, it really is a recurring theme, right? Like when we look across a lot of the other topics that we've covered, like, you know, when we look at housing and, you know, the economy and jobs, it's just like where there is a profit motive, there is really no other conclusion other than what we're seeing now, where it's just profit for the nth degree and everything gets left in the wake of that.
Yeah.
I'm also interested to know what your feelings are about, you know, being able to afford a house in this
Funny you say climate. I don't think I'm going to be alive long enough to afford a house, honestly. Like,
why do you say that?
Climate change is coming for us.
Yeah, that's a big fear for young people, isn't it? Climate change. I mean, I am afraid of climate change and the effects of climate change. But at the same time, you know, I think because I'm a bit older, I think like I don't have that sort of. I'm not at the beginning of my life sort of thing. So I don't have that sort of, I don't know, maybe as much fear about it because I'm sort of thinking.
I don't know. I genuinely don't know. I try to withhold judgment, but as in I try to not have a conclusion about, you know, will society collapse basically within the next 50 years. I try to not have a conclusion.
Yeah.
But like, do I think I'll ever be able to buy a house? No. I don't know.
Not without change happening. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Which maybe will, but
Maybe.
I'm fighting very hard to try and affect some change. I really, really am.
You know, Jordan,
I don't know what else to do as a person.
Yeah. I mean, of all the policies, I guess, that you're representing, is there a one that sticks out for you?
Climate. We have it's like a 60-page document, our full climate plan. So we want to transition to full renewable energy. We want to take the workers who were working in coal mines and fossil fuel and give them a 10-year transition, like job-to-job guarantee to transition them to some other line of work. We want to start exporting. So we want to be able to produce 700% of the capacity that we require if a renewable energy to either start selling that through a wire under the sea, basically, or turn that into hydrogen, or turn that into like goods that we can manufacture using green electricity. So I think the number one most important platform policy plank that we're running on is climate, number one. Because without that, I think most of the other ones is a moot point.
Yeah, I feel like young people are going to fix that. I'm pretty confident. Like, do you feel confident that young people, I mean, because they're learning that in school.
It'll be too late for young people. When Scott Morrison's like 50, right? When the Scott Morrisons and Joe Frieden, what's it, Josh Frydenberg, so the 40s and 50-year-olds are out of politics, right? It'll be too late.
Okay,
for that 1.5 degree Celsius. I think young people will fight like hell, but who knows? Maybe young people will be able to fix it.
You know, I keep looking at the older politicians and, like, I don't know about you, but when I see the older ones, I just think, well, you know, you'll be dead soon. Like,
yeah.
Is that what younger people do when they see older politicians who are completely, like, not into climate change and completely against it? Is that what younger people do? Do they look at
older? I certainly do.
Oh, you do? Yeah, because I honestly think, you know, younger people are, you know, they're going to change it. They're going to actually...
I think we can mitigate the effects for people in rich countries. Yeah, I think that's, let's say in Australia, we will be able to come up with, irrigation and agriculture solutions and like bushfire concrete walls or whatever thing we come up with. I think probably in rich countries, we will be able to mitigate the worst effects.
Yeah,
that's such a good idea. That's such a good point, because on things like the pandemic, that affected different parts of the community in really different ways, and specifically, you know, those.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and so it's going to be kind of similar to some respect.
So, like, I think it's reasonable to say that, like, pumping loads of CO2 into the climate, into the atmosphere. You know, the major companies, because it's all companies, massive companies that are doing this to make some money. Mm-hmm. Like, I think it is fair to say that that is an act of genocide, because the people who it's affecting will be poor countries in the global, well, people who live in poor countries in the global south, so like Africa and South America. So they're the people who will die first are those people, and that's who they're actively killing.
Yeah.
So I think it is fair to say that at least in the medium term, I think that's probably, you could consider it an act of genocide. Yeah.
So what suggestions would you make for our schooling system, for our education system?
So I work as a teacher aide and I'm studying secondary education. I think I said that. What would I want to improve? I think our whole model, again, I don't think it's broken. I think it was designed to make people moderately skilled, like skilled enough to perform semi-complex tasks, but not educated enough to be able to be anything other than compliant workers. So I think we need to vastly change how we do education. So for example, we should be teaching, I don't know if rigid classes and grades and tests or assessments are the way to go. I think maybe it should be a lot more flexible, where teachers facilitate self-directed student learning, maybe. But I think I'm just at the start of trying to figure out what would be a better way to do things.
So much on like spelling and things like that anymore, because of, you know how, you know, with technology coming into their lives and spell check on computers and things like that, I don't think spelling has been like as important as it was when I went to school.
No, because it's just not needed. Spelling's not emphasized as much, or the recall of facts. No, because we have
very computers.
Widely available, technologies, So we can have educational outcomes that I think are broadly good. Like, I think it is in itself good to learn maths, right? I think it's in itself good to learn science. I think it's in itself good and important to learn humanities, right?
Yeah.
And improving people's learning in those subjects I think is good and important, and that is something that we should do.
Mm.
That said, how we measure those outcomes, I don't know if, and I don't, again, I don't have a good answer for this. I'm just starting to think seriously about this.
Different education models, how people always look to other countries. Like I know a lot of the times people who like the Greens policies look to Germany. Do you feel like there's other models around the world that you look to that go, oh yeah, that's what we should be doing here?
Hmm.
I think Norway's okay. I might be wrong. So it's more like student directed and the teacher sort of facilitates. But again, then what are the expectations on teachers, and what can we say is how do we quantify the success of the outcome? I don't know. We live in a society to get some sort of, like, everyone buys into this idea of mutual benefit for living in a society, right?
Yeah.
And I think one of those benefits should be getting an education. And I think, like, it can't be for the education itself can't be for profit. I think the outcome, we're turning out little workers, and it's now more skilled workers, right? More workers who are more skilled, sure, but it's the same thing. They might as well just be fitting the top of the iPod, the headphone case, the bottom of the headphone case, right? But it's like people are still not necessarily, like, they're still doing essentially mechanical tasks that are just some cog in a giant machine to produce wealth for whoever owns it. Like, it's the same thing. It's just a different context and with a higher skill level. And I think that's mostly what education produces, people who are able to do that and are satisfied to do that. And I might be wrong. I don't know.
And
I don't know.
I guess the big question that everybody wants to know is, how do you go from the previous model of where, you know, it's a user pay system to being publicly funded education for everybody? How do they change to that model?
What do you mean? So how do you raise the money?
I guess. Because everybody's worried about paying more tax to the...
Oh, right, right. Well, you tax the very rich. So, like, so a policy that the Greens are running this election is we want a 6% wealth tax, so not income tax, but a tax on the net worth, right? 6% wealth tax on billionaires and 40% tax on profits over $100 million. And I know that'll raise a fair amount of money. We can also stop spending money on handouts to fossil fuel companies, say. And we can rejig how we spend money. And I think if we decide that education is something essential, which it is, we can find the money pretty easy. If we're just going to prioritize education, right, we can find that money pretty easily, I reckon. In terms of how do you go about doing that, that's what I'm not sure. So again, we could just make better resourced, more efficient schools that are now free but have the same outcomes, essentially. Like the philosophical basis of the intent, the point of education is still the same, right? Maybe we could end up with that, but just better resourced, better funded, more efficient. How could we transform that into something better? I don't know, and I don't think I should be the only person in charge of calling the shots on that one.
Mm. And what about the difference in funding between public and private schools?
What are they getting, 5 times more private schools funding? Or the increase in funding has been 5 times greater, is it?
I can't remember exactly, but it was certainly a hell of a lot more money that
schools shouldn't. Private schools shouldn't get any money. Like, you can have a private business that runs a school and you can say, well, these are the standards that you need to meet in order to be considered a school. But, like, private schools shouldn't have any money from the government. None.
Yeah, yes. I wonder what their fees are going towards. Like, because they pay a lot of money in fees.
Yeah, absolutely.
I wouldn't begin to speculate.
Yeah, but then I was also reading something about, you know, I thought that you had to somehow be like super intelligent to get into a lot of these places, like, I don't know, Oxford and Cambridge and, you know, places like that. But apparently, you know, if you give a huge donation to these places, you can get in. You know, I didn't think it was. Yeah, I didn't think it was like that, that if you, you know, it depends on how much of a donation you give to these.
Sure. How much your rich parents donate?
Yes, yes.
I don't know if that's... The ultra rich are going to ultra rich, you know, I don't know, whatever. I don't know how... I feel like we have this weird... We, like, weirdly fetishize these high-prestige unis, right?
Yeah.
I'm at Harvard, I'm at Oxford, I'm at Cambridge, I'm Princeton, right? I don't know how much, how...
Is Griffith not in that list? Okay.
Were you a Griffith student? Derogatory. I tried to transfer to Griffith, but they're only going to give you like 3 classes that they're going to recognize credit for. And I was like, oh, I think I won't actually.
sorry, Griffith.
No, Griffith, you seem like a decent uni and I wanted to go there. Not a plug or an endorsement. No, just endorsement. But.
See, that's the thing. Like, you hear about these universities and, you know, on movies and stuff, but you don't actually hear about ours. So I don't know where ours rank. Like, I don't.
I think some of our unis are pretty decent.
Yeah.
U is top 50, so like 48, 49. Uni of Melbourne's top something. Like, Uni of Melbourne's the best one in the country, I think.
Wow.
Yeah, business school too is quite high, yeah.
Oh, there you go.
Uni of Melbourne Medicine's, I know, is very high.
Is it?
Yeah. But again, like, what does that even reflect?
Who knows?
I think we do have some decently ranked unis in this country.
Hmm.
I mean, really, all you need is a pass. You just need to get your bit of paper and have your qualification.
Again, maybe that used to be the case, but now it's like, well, you look at what your GPA was when they're selecting you for jobs or whatever, in some cases.
Yeah, that's never happened. That's never happened to me. No. Yeah.
But I don't know. But
it may happen as things get more competitive.
Sure. Yeah, for competitive stuff. I mean, like law.
Yeah, possibly.
Mm. Or if you've interned with so-and-so because you had the right connections through, you know.
Mm. So, what do you reckon are your 3 big things to make life better for young people, in terms of, like, as we move through the coronavirus and we're rebuilding and, you know, we've got this, we've got climate change, we've got, you know, the cost of education, and obviously young people are going to have to, you know, compete for jobs and compete for their place in the world. What do you think are your 3 big things to make life better?
So if we're talking about coronavirus in particular, I think that one's over. Like, we lost. It's going to, like, it seems everyone's given up. So nothing, moot point. In terms of going forward, you know, beyond the Rona.
Yeah.
Number one, climate action. Most important, without that, the others can't happen. Number two, it's not just the housing or education market or any market that you pick. All the markets are shot. You know, it's we need a serious reevaluation. And I don't know what the first immediate big steps will be. I can guess, like, greater safety net, significantly greater workers' rights. So let's say there was a good unemployment, right? There's no incentive, like, bosses can't bully you or make you work crappy jobs, crappy hours, crappy conditions, because you can just say, well, I quit. There's a universal basic income or whatever, right? Number two is significantly greater worker rights and protections, I think, and raising a minimum wage, that sort of thing, to give workers more money. There are probably a few steps that we could take to reboot different markets, but I'll keep it brief. So number one, climate. Number two, all markets are shot. And I think number three would be social justice, basically. Creating a society where, you know, these sort of dominant social groups and social hierarchies are, you know, it's flattened so that you have, so that if you're a, the current one, they're kicking a transgender people mostly at the moment. That's, that seems to be the hot one, at least in Australia. I don't know about overseas. But like, so that if you're trans, you're not going to be treated like shit.
Yeah.
You know, I think everyone understands when I say social justice, what I mean. People should be actually treated as fundamentally, internally, so equitable treatment, but treated with an understanding that we're all human in exactly the same way as each other.
Yeah.
And I think if we're able to act on those three admittedly very broad things, climate change, an economic fixer-upper, and social justice, I think that, environmental, economic, and social justice, that's normally what I say. I think if we're able to act on those, then I think there's a good chance of people in the countries where that happens living a better standard of life than could be available to them if that did not happen.
Excellent. And finally, why, why do you think people should vote for you in particular, Jordan?
Because I care about that stuff. None of the other parties do. And, you know, maybe some very micro parties have are able to look at it through a very specific lens. But I think as a, in terms of having a broad base of demanding and fighting for environmental, economic, and social justice, I think that the Greens, and I'm one of them, are fighting tooth and nail for people to have a better life and for there to be a future. Like Labor and Liberal don't disagree on coal mines, you know. Labor's like fairly economically conservative. The far right anti-vax white supremacist parties are like the opposite of you know, justice, environmental, economic, and social justice. I don't know. I think I'm the only candidate, at least in Ford, that's offering a future that you'd want to live in.
That was excellent, Jordan.
I feel like I was a bit doomer.
No.
you saved it right at the end there.
Yeah, it was really good.
No, it was really great, Jordan. Yeah.
It was really good. All right. You've been listening to Beyond the Rona. Captioned audio is available on our YouTube channel, or you can visit beyondtherona.com to view previous episodes or to keep in touch. We'll catch you later.